The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsarup Das Goswami on September 27th, 1992 in Vrindavan.
I thought we could start today by my taking some realizations I received from some of you in letters. And commenting on them, elaborating, and then this might spark some of you to also bring up something for me to speak on. It can be a realization that you had, or half a realization and half the expression of a problem or a question. The one I'm starting with is about a theme we always talk about when I get together with devotees in these meetings in Vrindavan. And that is about coming to Vrindavan. A few of you are living here in Vrindavan for years, but many of you are coming for the first time. And last week we were speaking about relationship with between the guru and the disciple, and several of you wrote to me and seemed to be particularly interested in that. So that may come up also. And again, some of you and I have been together for over 10 years, and some of you are just starting to meet. So, one devotee wrote me about this, on this theme of being basically situated in Krishna consciousness in the outside of India, taking a Prabhudatta Desh, a place to serve the spiritual master and the movement in some Western country. But coming to Vrindavan, even before getting here, thinking how I want to learn lessons and gain impressions, that I can bring back to give me direction or enliven me in my service. So I would like to consider some of the things we can look forward to learning. And one was the one this devotee mentioned. And that was that, in effect, she felt immediately of being humbled. He's selling drums, and he wears them all around, advertising. I first saw him, I thought he was just like a one-man band, just for fun. Then I realized, oh, it means that if you like one of these. So this devotee in her home temple is a book distributor, and not that many devotees were doing book distribution, so she's being honored and very much appreciated as a leader in that service. So you tend to become a little proud, or you could say spoiled, getting used to that honor. Then coming into a larger gathering of devotees, one isn't so much even noticed or known or praised. And they may be more developed than you in that service or other services, more developed in their relationship with the spiritual master and so on. So as a result, you feel small and humbled. So she could see this was a good lesson if you can take it in the right way, not some kind of material suffering. That's one of the arts we have to learn, how to accept whatever is happening in a way that's favorable to our Krishna consciousness. I talked about that in the Bhagavatam class I gave, about not becoming envious of others who are more advanced and so on. So that's one lesson. Not exactly to be gained in Vrindavan Dham, but in the association of many devotees. And Vrindavan Dham will contribute to that humbling when you see how much you don't know about Krishna consciousness. Maybe you thought you had the field figured out, the field of ISKCON, temple life, Sankirtan preaching, and not that you knew the whole extent of it, but you were familiar with what you thought was the total field, the total depth. And then you see that there's so many things which are very important which you didn't even know about. Well, that's good. Like when explorers discovered new continents, they became very joyful to try to enter them. Not perpetually thinking, oh, I didn't know about this. But then saying, let us go ahead. So, speaking more specifically about what we can discover in Vrindavan, another lesson after that initial humbling of oneself among the devotees is a growing awareness that the worshipable goal of Krishna consciousness from the beginning to the middle to the end is all revealed here in Vrindavan. Or why is Vrindavan special to us? The beginning stage of Krishna consciousness is called Sambandha. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Did I got it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right. So that means, as Prabhupada put it, the first stage is to awaken to the fact of relationship with God, which I was not aware of. And then to engage in service and to reach the ultimate goal, the three stages. So this is the land where Krishna originally came with his whole entourage and performed his pastimes. Here even the ordinary person at least lives with Radha Shyam, Radha Krishna, on some level, worships Radha Krishna. And very advanced devotees, who are very rare, especially in this age, can actually be aware that the Radha Krishna pastimes are still taking place in this Vrindavan. So for us, to be aware that yes, the Radha Krishna is the goal, and I am not able to enter this. I'm not able, I've come to Vrindavan, but I cannot enter Vrindavan. So this is something that we don't, again, remain petrified about, but we start to take up activities and try to improve or discover. As as many of you were doing this morning, by going on parikram over down Radhakund. This is one way. Visiting the temple, seeing the deities in the temples. I was listening to Prabhupada on a tape today. Lecture he gave. I've been listening to lectures he gave in Vrindavan over the years. 1976 he was lecturing. And he was saying how people think that coming to Vrindavan and bathing in the Yamuna, that all, their whole purpose of pilgrimage is complete. He said, of course, this is also purifying. But if one thinks that this is the whole purpose, and then he said, and then he may also, in addition, buy some utensils for his relatives. My purpose of pilgrimage is complete. But no, he must consult with saintly persons who are living there to find out about the nature of Vrindavan, or to speak of the nature of the soul, the nature of the Supreme. As Prabhupada said it, he seemed to indicate his Krishna consciousness movement, the presence of himself and his devotees in the Krishna Balaram temple, because he said devotees who are preaching about Krishna in Vrindavan and helping suffering ignorant people come and inquire from them as part of your coming to Vrindavan. So that's natural while in Vrindavan to try to awaken your awareness of Radha Krishna pastimes by reading, by getting guidance in how to read and how to inquire from residents of Vrindavan and trusted Vaishnavas. And then these two things, they still seem kind of like a dual, that I've come from somewhere in the West and I'm going to return after a few weeks or months. So now that I'm in Vrindavan, I realize after overcoming initial culture shock and other transformations, I realize that there's something wonderful here, completely different from the Krishna consciousness I've been practicing in the West. And though it's mostly unattainable to me, still I can benefit greatly by whatever I can do here, whatever I can perform without offense. But then, how does this relate to my returning again to the West? Will it just be like an exotic memory of fading impressions? That which is happening to me now, while I'm here, how to relate that to who I actually am? Sometimes devotees, they love Vrindavan, but when they first come, I'm speaking of, you feel euphoric and infatuated and that Krishna is not too far away here. They can chant better and so on. But maybe not really think realistically in terms of where they're actually situated in devotional service, progress or lack of progress. So if we could do that, we could take better advantage of our stay in Vrindavan. We usually think of trying to pray to Krishna for direction here and so on. Try to get some inspiration for how to conduct our lives. This point I've written down here. Seeing your present inability to live in Vrindavan free from sense gratification, you may gain realistic enthusiasm to go back and practice Krishna consciousness at the appropriate level of your vana and ashram, but with some inner resolution to chant and hear better and not forget Braja. Therefore, while here, try to experience something worth remembering. Allow the Dham to touch you. Don't get carried away in superficial socializing, etc. I think this realistic level will come if you allow the time here and you're thoughtful here. In a sense, it's a difficult time to come to Vrindavan because there's so many devotees here and we get caught up in the VIHE and other activities. But still, there's time. And if we're careful and thoughtful, you won't get carried away. So by realistic, I mean that the obvious problems that you have and things that you're concerned with can be seen in the superior spiritual light that you find here, or the better inner awareness that you have here, being removed from your old routine, your old self-conceptions, and coming in this rare atmosphere. On the one hand, you can try to see purely and hear as much as you can about advanced topics of Radha and Krishna with your real eternal self. But inevitably, we have to think about the things that we've not really left behind, but we have that we must be concerned with. So here you may be able to make realistic, but better, let's say, more idealistic, more Krishna-conscious decisions and resolutions about how you'll practice Krishna consciousness when you return. And you can talk that over with devotees who know you, or write back to devotees, husbands and wives who may not be with you. Or we can do that. And maybe while we're here together, I can help you with those things. Well, maybe we can have some discussion. Any kind of questions you have?
When I came here, I noticed there is such a mood in Vrindavan, and the local inhabitants, they're like so much different than me. And then I got like the question, what should we do? Should we be like one of them, try to come like be like them? Or in other words, what should be our relationship with the Vrijvasis? Or how should we deal with them? And I couldn't relate to it. I was like a shock.
How should we relate to the Vrijvasis or the people who live here? On one level, everyone can be considered a Vrijvasi who lives here, but on another level, a Vrijvasi means someone very special who loves Krishna in Braj. Not a criminal, a thief, a culprit who happens to be here. he's also not an ordinary thief and so on. But still, it's not that every rickshaw driver is a Brijabasi. So, but still, okay, as far as our behavior, we should, just like in the offenses to the Dham, we should try, should not commit, no matter where we are, but even more here, don't commit any offenses to any creatures. So, you have the advice Lord Chaitanya gave to his disciple, Jagadananda, when he went to Vrindavan, how to deal with the Brijabasis. He said, don't mix with them too closely, because they're on a different platform than you are on. They have a spontaneous relationship with Krishna, so you may commit offenses and not liking the way they do things. But they have some relationship with Krishna that is spontaneous. No, you say, should you act like them? You can act like them. You're different. So we should act like when Prabhupada first brought the Western devotees here in 1971, and in some ways they were rude and they were aggressive and they caused scandalous behavior in the Dham. So we should try to act like gentlemen and ladies according to the Vaishnava etiquette we've learned. We may not always do the appropriate thing because we're ignorant, but as long as we try to be gentle and sincere, the way we've been taught to be Krishna conscious, that's the best we can do. And but discriminate with how people reciprocate with you as to how much you could actually share with someone. There's some guidelines.
One particular thing.
Yeah.
I just went to buy one oil here on the way.
Buy what?
Buy one oil.
Yeah.
For a week. And this man invited me for prasadam. And he said, don't mix closely with them. So I was wondering, should I come or should I not come?
Maybe you can find out a little bit about him first. As we fortunately we have the devotees, our god brothers and god sisters who live here, and they know these people. They have developed close relationships with various people here, and may take prasadam with them. They may tell you, rather than just walking off into situations on your own, you can ask. Yes.
It's so different from the rest of the devotees who live in here. How can we not take it for granted and not see them for a
time? We can repeat the question.
Yeah, so this is a question from a different angle, not like a newcomer to Vrindavan, but one who lives here. How can you not, how can you avoid taking Vrindavan for granted and using your time well? In one sense, as Prabhupada showed, that Krishna conscious application is the same wherever you are in the world. Wherever he was, it was Vrindavan. And he also saw that his devotees sometimes didn't behave well even in Vrindavan. In these lectures I've been listening to, he's criticizing his devotees for not getting up early in Vrindavan. So, in other words, I don't think it's a Vrindavan problem specifically. It's just a matter of being Krishna conscious, to use your time well, wherever you are, and take advantage of life, and take advantage of wherever you happen to be. There's always some particular advantage. like if you live in the Soho Street, London, there's such an advantage for preaching on the streets and to the people in the temple. So take advantage. Here in Vrindavan, there's certain advantages. So you can get, you can certainly get slack here. You can get lax here. So it requires just becoming serious about the goal of life and finding your service that you want to do and doing it wholeheartedly. If you happen to be in Vrindavan, then there are so many extra benefits. But the same test is there to use your time and use your life for fully engaging in service of Guru and Krishna. That has to come by a certain maturity. Awareness that we could die at any time. All the basic lessons of spiritual life, as we understand them, we become more serious and prosecute Krishna consciousness. It may be that Vrindavan is not the best place for an individual to do that. Like in Prabhupada's case, he left Vrindavan to intensify his mission. But whatever it is, even in Vrindavan, there's your question, whatever it is to be serious and intensify my Krishna consciousness, even if it meant leave Vrindavan, because I'm becoming too familiar or whatever, then whatever it is, I do the needful. Do whatever is favorable and avoid what is unfavorable. Vrindavan requires certain demands. And if you can meet them, then Krishna consciousness goes very quickly. Prabhupada said, if you actually do service here, you make more advancement than service in other places in the world. But he also regularly asked people to leave Vrindavan to improve their service. In any event, we want to think of Vrindavan and come back to Vrindavan. If not, stay in Vrindavan. And do whatever is best for staying fully engaged in service.
You were pointing out the advantage of coming to Vrindavan, that one has increased facility to hear about higher topics and also to try and awaken attraction for your relationship with Radha and Krishna. But at the same time, we have to deal with where we're at and the different narratives that are there. So maybe you could say something more about the interrelationship between those two things.
Well, I think of the example of a foundation, like in a building has a foundation. So the foundation must be strong. We can compare that to Vaidhi Bhakti and higher stages, Raganuga Bhakti. In these lectures, several times I heard Prabhupada talking about the importance of, he was using the word Vidhi, say Vaidhi or Vidhi, meaning following rules and regulations, like getting up early, chanting, on the order of the guru and by scriptural injunction. So he was saying how this is very important and can't be abandoned. So, especially when we don't do these things very naturally, this is our foundation, faith in the spiritual master and performing full-time duties of Krishna consciousness, prescribed chanting of rounds and so on. This is foundation. If you don't have a good foundation, you can't build higher and higher. So that's a relationship between, in one sense, being, as I say, being where we're at realistically and taking advantage of the... So one thing might be like, again, speaking for those devotees who come here like on pilgrimage, that they know that they need to purify themselves of vishayi, or sense gratification, in order to enter Vrindavan. So the relationship is that by the austerities I perform in my Krishna conscious situation in the West, serving the Guru, serving the mission, Sankirtan movement, I purify myself so that I can come and deserve to hear the topics of Radha and Krishna. That's also foundation or relationship of the two. To come here in a sense gratifying mood is very dangerous. Or to come here without a foundation and try to enter a Radha Krishna Leela is dangerous. So we can think in those terms. The foundation is never abandoned, and it may need inspection regularly, even as you're building. Sometimes a building may be built with the idea that as we can't build the whole thing at once, but as time goes by, we have money, we'll add more and more stories to this building. So when it's time to start adding some stories, you want to inspect, are there any cracks in the foundation? Is it all right to build here? So in other words, the foundation isn't like some primary education you had which you forget now, but you need it. And even in the description of Aidi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti, we learn that the same activities continue, but with more emphasis on Radha and Krishna, chanting, hearing, remembering what you did, you continue to do. And you continue your Sankirtan activities as part of Lord Chaitanya's movement. And if you're fortunate enough, then you can cultivate more awareness of love of Krishna. I was also thinking in terms, when I mentioned Varna and Ashram, that coming to Vrindavan means taking a very advanced act or a progressive act in our spiritual life, get in touch with this realm. But then we may see, well, I'm really, I haven't settled up some foundational activities. And although it's in a sense it may seem inappropriate, coming to Vrindavan you may decide to get married. I don't mean that as a wrong thing. You may decide to go back and do something very basic that finally now you see I have to do this in the right way, some foundational thing. It helps you think about some down-to-earth things, because now you see if I want to come all the way to this consciousness that I get a little glimpse of in Vrindavan, I'm going to have to go back and really get some things together. So I've been fooling around in a certain area. Now I should do this and start going through the regular steps of purification. It may put into place some decisions that don't seem to be related. Even while walking in Govardhan and hearing about the transcendental appearance of Govardhan and all that, something may click inside that with resolution that now I know what I have to do back in New Jersey, whatever it is. I know it, now I have to really do it now, and I won't be hesitant. I'll go back and I'll do the right thing. But you got that inspiration by coming a little closer to the goal, and now you have to go back again and then come forward having done the right things. And that can all happen very quickly too, getting things together and going forward. Or it can happen not so quickly. But if we leave preliminary work undone or don't have a good foundation, then we cannot go higher and higher. The devotee who rented this house, Baladev, was with us here, and he hadn't been here for a while. He became very attracted to Vrindavan. Wants to buy a house and stay in Vrindavan. So he was asking me how soon he could do this, and I said, "Well, I think you still have to work it out, work out things. You're recently married, you're doing business. So the scriptures say when you're in 50-ish, early 50s or 50-ish, then you can try to give up all those things, and if you really have a desire, you can come and live in Vrindavan in a very simple way. But I don't think you can come before that. So one can start making, you could say, vanaprastha plans based on some initial attraction to Vrindavan, then, as I say, go back and make actual deliberate plans. That you were in Vrindavan for a few months. Mm-hmm. Someone says, "How did you like it?" Said, "Oh, it was very nice. I loved it." And then the next question is, "So what are your conclusions? What are you going to do about it?" Said, "Well, now I'm planning my life in such a way that I think I'm going to go and retire there in 10 years or something like that." And I've done some practical things towards actually bringing that about. Because, as Prabhupada says, you can't just come to Vrindavan by plane or by a ticket. Otherwise, you'll be driven out of here. But so that preparation is purifying so that you can be renounced and be attracted to what's here. Anyone else have any things to say? Doesn't have to be on this.
Guru Maharaj, there's the two kinds of activities, constitutional and conditional. Maybe they're called different things in different places, but Prabhupada, I know in the Bhagavad Gita describes how we should try and keep those as parallel or as close, so that we're doing both at the same time if possible. And sometimes it's not that way. But like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in one throughput, I guess it's in the Antyalila, where Prabhupada says that in, when one takes the Grahastha Ashram, his spiritual advancement becomes almost nil. I think at one point he says like that. So sometimes it seems like in direct conflict, you know, with spiritual advancements and the activities that we have to do in our duty within the Grahastha Ashram. I'm wondering how, you know, I was talking with Navadvipa about this, and they're saying, you know, just like in Prabhupada's life, there was a period when he was, you know, like when he wrote to would like to sit on to Saraswati Thakur, so how can I serve Yamagrahastha? There's unlimited what I can do. And then Navadvipa was saying it's like a, it's almost like a pressure cooker. We have a desire to do more direct service or have a higher standard of Krishna consciousness than actually conditions permit. So what I'm wondering is that, you know, how can we utilize that, it seems like even a reduced facility, to increase our Krishna consciousness and not be in a situation where we're not making any advancement.
Well, Prabhupada said that in one place, but he's been more encouraging in other places about the possibilities of advancing in grihastha life. A kind of Krishna conscious grihastha life, not a grihamedi life, can be progressive. I was just looking in Hari Suri's diary to that controversy that took place in 1976, where some of the sannyasis were making propaganda that you can't make any advancement in grihastha ashram, therefore grihastha should leave the preaching to the sannyasis and stay out of it. And Prabhupada said, no, they can preach as well as sannyasis can preach. Advancement of a devotee doesn't depend on what ashram is, and he was emphasizing those things. So I think this has to do with the relationship of the husband and wife and how they should share aims of having a serious ashram now, not just thinking that our advancement is going to be nil for 40 years and then we can both start making advancement. But having a life which will contribute to that, and that seems to be one of the, that we should all be serious. So if you've gotten some seriousness and you're going to get married, then at the time of choosing the marriage mate and afterwards, regularly, that should be something that we're consulting on, trying to keep our marriage in such a way that we can make spiritual advancement. Not accept the idea that it must be nil. Even though there are certain disadvantages, they can be minimized. I think it's in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, in the introduction, Prabhupada talks about Maya, and he says that we should try to be free of Maya, but if we live with Maya, then it should be under control. So if there is some Maya there, or some license, it doesn't have to be for sense gratification. It should be controlled and not exaggerated. There are many bad examples, but there are also good examples of devotees who are in grihastha ashram and making very good contributions to this movement and advancing. So the very things, there's not a thing, therapeutically treated, become a cure for that which causes the disease. Raising children in Krishna consciousness, these things can be positive. And learning the lessons, that although I had some idea, part of my idea for grihastha was enjoyment, I see that because I have enough honesty that I want to follow the actual program for grihastha life, so by following it I see that there's so many difficulties in grihastha life, so I'm learning my lesson. Becoming truly renounced by seeing that there's not happiness in family life. A serious grihastha is a serious person, as much as a serious sannyasi. more? I'll read you something else that someone wrote me on a different topic. I was speaking last week about the particular relationship between a guru and disciples. How he teaches and so on. So, and how we should identify as disciples of our spiritual master. Try to learn from him in the way he teaches us and develop a personal relationship in which to do this by give and take. We hope that we choose a particular spiritual master for the right reasons, and that there's that we gain inspiration from his presentation to chant and hear and so on. So in my case, I try to give instructions by writing, a major service, way of doing it. So when I hear that people do respond and can gain from this, then it's encouraging to me also. And there's so much of it that if you can develop the Vaishnava qualities from these instructions, then that's good for both of us. There's that saying that if you've come to dance, then why are you putting a veil on? So, similarly, if I'm writing, I can ask you to read. And if your spiritual master is teaching in that way, you should take advantage. What Prabhupada is teaching is available to all of us. I only repeat what he teaches. But I've been trying to make my own advancement and to teach at the same time, to teach by example. We may teach by being on the perfect stage. We can also teach by showing how to improve oneself to the perfect stage, which teaching in some cases may be more relevant to fellow strugglers. So one aspect of this that I have felt to be very compelling thing to develop, and it's also very rewarding, has its own reward, is the quest for honesty, to try to be honest, starting with being honest with yourself. I'm trying not to get involved in various kinds of dishonesty. And this means trying, this means also learning to think for yourself. And all this I mean in terms, not in an ordinary sense, but in terms of Krishna consciousness. And it's not just by chance that these things come up, but we see that they are needed, and that sometimes, although they may be assumed to be part of the Vaishnava character, we see them absent in our movement as an institution or in individual devotees or even in leaders. So it's up to each of us to develop this. Honesty and call it self-awareness. So that you can really surrender your life, for your whole life. I mention these because one devotee wrote me and said that she felt by reading my book she was developing these traits. So these are some of the things I'm teaching, and if you learn these and put them into the, or connect them to the exalted Krishna conscious philosophy that we're always hearing, then it becomes realized. And actually without these things, devotees, especially being young and the material world being as horrible as it is, they get spun into the Krishna consciousness movement somehow and by past good activities. But after a while, not being honest, not finding out who they are, they just can't continue in a general program that's prescribed for them. And they leave, never even having maybe told anybody or even known why they grew dissatisfied. I guess this can be related to the foundations and the floors.
It takes actually a special quality of courage to cultivate this honesty, because you have to expose yourself to all the ramifications of that self-examination and understanding. But could you explain how by doing that you're actually blessed with a special power to overcome difficulties that perhaps you would still be involved in if you hadn't come to that point of being brave to be honest?
Well, I was developing this idea a little earlier today that if we don't do something right, we have to go back. Like, if we come to exalted Vrindavan, we have to go back first and do things right, and then we can actually enter Vrindavan without Vishayi and so forth. So, until we're brave enough to be honest, we can't situate ourselves in a way to get the full benefits of Krishna consciousness. The rewards of the honesty are so nice. There's a statement about Lord Ramchandra that he had so many good qualities as a human being, although he was God. I remember when I first read the Ramayana, how attractive I was to him. And so he was an advocate of truth. And as a Kshatriya, there's particular applications for that which may seem a little strange to us, but still take it that it's truth that he was after. So his truth was that he should follow what his father wanted, and that meant he had to be banished to the forest. So his brother said, why don't we fight and we can make a military coup and take over? You don't have to go to the forest. So he said, I would not be happy that way. But, and then he philosophized. He said, an honest person, he will be peaceful and happy wherever he is. So, and then we see Lord Ramchandra in the forest. He had no amenities of the royal throne, but he was always happy and peaceful because he was living by the truth. So you may cheat and get the royal post, but it'll eventually be all undone. And you'll always be in anxiety that because you're not being honest. Being in an ashram and cheating within that ashram, or cheating one way or another. So, although the bravery of being honest may bring about some public infamy or so on, we are trying to line ourselves up with the truth, and that will make us eventually surrendered. Honesty doesn't, in this sense, doesn't mean giving into your lower nature. It takes some doing to find out what it is to be honest. Constant endeavor. It's like service. Service is its own reward, so honesty is its own reward. Not that you have to get something for it, but you can start being honest. Non-duplicitous is one of the qualities of the Brahman. Simple. I wrote this book, Shack Notes, and that was like the beginning. It wasn't like the end of a type of expression. But a lot of the elements of what I wrote there I wrote a small book about Prabhupada, using some of the same methods. That's be published soon, called Here is Srila Prabhupada. And then then I wrote in this spring a sequel to Japa Reform Notebook. I went to a person gave me a place to stay in Italy for a few weeks, and I just concentrated on simultaneous japa and writing about japa, and so did something called Begging for the Nectar of the Holy Name. Then I've been writing things that I'm not publishing, but are just that maybe someday I can publish, just going more and more into my attempt to express what I'm learning and honesty and so on. writing for publishing is preaching, and but it has its certain demands of being presentable according to time and place, whereas the truth doesn't always conform to that. It takes different shapes, so that it can't always be shared right away. But so writing is always purifying, so sometimes I'm just writing without any particular publishing purpose. But the other things, so those two books are being prepared, and continue to take from whatever I write for the Among Friends publication. And I've, since coming here, I've tried to write some poetry also. That's about it. Guruji-chan asked me if I could teach a writing course next year. I thought a lot about it, but then I thought I couldn't do it. But I think I might be able to do it for 7 classes, maybe, in, at the short institute that they have at Giranagari in January. So I'm starting to think about that. It would be writing for self-purification. And I'm writing letters. I have a tentative idea for a VIHE seminar next year. I'd like, speaking of purification, and I like to purify myself by staying with Prabhupada's books. Because sometimes my interest takes me into all the translations that are coming out of the 6 Goswamis' literatures. So I thought of doing another Prabhupada course. There are a number of his conversations that have a particular appeal, and I thought if I could select some of them and then do one of them each class. But it would... selection of Prabhupada's conversations. A lot would have to go into the selection so that there was a real variety. And I'm thinking of asking some of my disciples to help me go through those 27 volumes. Some of them, they're like repetitive, but some of them are quite different. Where the persons respond in an interesting way and so on. I know of one that I like, the professor Durkheim in Germany. Very interesting topics are brought up. The man, in a sort of challenging way, he's saying that Prabhupada seems to be teaching just about belief, acceptance of belief, but spiritual life has to mean experience. You have to actually, the devotees have to have experiences. And Prabhupada, when pressed on this point, he gives some interesting answers about experience and receiving knowledge in disciplic succession. So if I can find enough intriguing, in a sense at all intriguing, but for the purposes of a course, a variety of interesting talks, maybe I'll ask some of you to take a few volumes and look through them and then tell me, well, these three lectures seem to be, or conversations seem particularly interesting. So preparing a course is another writing, sort of, for me it turns into writing. Writing the outlines. We can meet here every Sunday as long as we can, or Sunday.
Yeah. Same time, 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock is good, before the mosquitoes come. All right, I'll stop then. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.